When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful about slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. No Steve today on a Wednesday. Unusual, but it's because tomorrow we're going to have the great Dane Brugler on to talk through his draft guide, his draft takes, all things draft. So, Mike, you're in the chair again today. How's it going?
Doing fantastic. I cannot compete with Dane's draft guide. That thing is an absolute treasure trove of good nuggets. I almost feel like I don't know what the policy is on stealing nuggets that someone else like has.
Right.
But I steal nuggets from it. I'll just say it right now. Dane, I'm sorry. I am going to steal the best nuggets from your draft guide.
It is crazy. It feels in some ways when you look through it and read. Well, so number one, the depth and the breadth of the thing is madness. Like he goes, I think 10 deep in long snappers, 20 deep in punters and kickers. Like that's, we haven't mentioned a kicker, punter, or long snapper during this entire pre-draft process, nor do I expect us to start beyond this particular sidebar. But also, when you start reading like the sort of entries for individual players, it almost feels like a bit, you know? He's like, this guy born in this town, in this hospital on, you know, the Sabbath with a half moon. You're like, come on, this can't be real. Like how
he gives this like astrological full signage, like his moon sign, his star sign.
Like I copied the first line of the Bryce Young thing when I was talking to somebody about it. I can't find it right now, but it's crazy. It's like it feels like it's a joke, and yet it isn't. Like this is just the depth he goes to on every NFL player. Yeah, this one. Here we go. Bryce Young. Quote, Bryce Young, an only child, was born in Wynwood, Pennsylvania, just outside Philadelphia at Lake Canal Hospital. Like, and that was just the start of it. Then he goes into, you know, actual biographical background.
His parents screwed up not having another child. If your one guy that you got was Bryce Young as an athlete, maybe you should have had another.
What
there.
If the second one would have been
Mom
6'3"?
And dad.
The second one could have been 6'3", 220, and then we wouldn't have this conversation.
I know. Come on. It's like the Mannings. The second one's maybe a little bit slower, but he ends up winning two rings still.
So today's show, we're going to be talking about these size outliers, guys like Bryce Young. There seems to be a lot of them in this draft. A ton of these smaller guys in particular. We're going to run through an article or two on PFF.com talking about those guys. We're also going to talk about players worth trading up for, because I did a mock draft on Monday and I had a few trades up. Obviously, there's the quarterbacks at the start, but actual non-quarterback players that I think teams are going to start to target trading up, particularly in that second half of the first round. I think we're going to see a bunch of that. And then I asked Twitter this morning, and the chat box maybe will throw some of these in as well, but who is this year's Cole Strange, right? The random-ass guy that's supposed to go in the third round or something. Everybody's talking about as a mid-round pick right now, who somebody is going to pull the trigger on in round one, and we are all going to see our minds blown. There's going to be one of those. So Twitter has given me a bunch of responses. I'm going to pitch them to you. And in this world of, you know, nobody saw Cole Strange coming, I still want to get your reaction on a spectrum of, yeah, you know, I kind of see how that works too. Not a chance in hell that one is going to happen. So
okay, I like that. I like this. I'm excited for that. Fun.
Before we get to that, the PFF NFL podcast is, of course, sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, Mike, you want to get into the size outliers thing? So
yes, let's do it.
What the hell is happening this year with all these crazy small people?
I will say, though, there also is a size outlier on the larger side.
Okay.
DeJuan Jones,
true.
Ohio State offensive tackle, should be noted that he's the biggest human being that's going to grace an NFL field. I mean, Daniel Falele was heavier, but DeJuan Jones is, like, massive in terms of 7'5 wingspan. So he's the big outlier. But then you have probably, like, a half dozen guys who are going to be, like, the smallest drafted player at their respective position in any time in recent memory. With the first one being Bryce Young, you know, the talk of the draft. It is kind of insane just how little he is.
Yeah.
You know, it's he looks like a high school prospect kind of out there. He really does not look like how a quarterback looks. And yeah, he's been hitting the weight room this spring, and as pro day, he did look bigger than that picture you saw right there. But any weight he puts on at this point, I think it's safe to say it's not going to get him into NFL quarterback territory. It's just too far behind the curve that his success is, whatever it is, good or bad, will obviously be a massive outlier at the position because of just how unique his size is.
Yeah, I mean, the 204 pounds thing, like, I've been using 185, 190 as a baseline. That was effectively his playing weight at Alabama. That's what he's going to be at the next level. Maybe he can add a tiny bit of muscle, but it's not like he was in a bad program with no kind of weight room and no, you know, nutrition. It's like, that's one of the most impressive programs in the country. We're talking about a sort of Devontae Smith situation where this is what he is, right? Maybe he can pack on, like, the difference between the two is that Bryce Young spent this offseason trying to get to 204 by the combine, whereas Devontae Smith set his stall out immediately and went, I weigh 166, that's what you're signing up for, deal with it, and didn't try and put on 20 pounds before the combine. So, like, Bryce Young is 5'10 and a quarter, which is shorter than me, and he's probably 185, 190 when he steps on an NFL field, which is incredibly lightweight. And we've talked about this before. When you go to the combine, when you go to the Super Bowl, and you're in this giant media room with all these former NFL quarterbacks, the one thing you notice is how freaking huge all those guys are, right? Boomer Esiason, Carson Palmer, Ryan Leaf, these guys are all 6'5", you know, massive human beings. They're standing next to me, and I get made look like a child, and then I'm Bryce Young's size. So by definition, this guy is nowhere near the baseline of NFL quarterback.
Yeah, but I still, two things. One, to get to, like, elite level, though, like the top end guys, they're all outliers in some way, right? Like, you have to have something just different about you to get to that caliber of player. And two, like, if he wasn't 5'10", 204 pounds, which is what he came in at the combine, I think we'd be talking about him in an air that rivals that of Trevor Lawrence, because this guy was, for his entire career, in that realm of performance, right? Like, he led the number one high school team in the country. He was the number one recruit, 20th recruit all time by 247 Sports. The number one quarterback recruit in that class, only Brian Brzee was higher on most boards in that class. So number one recruit, goes to Alabama, wins a Heisman the first year, beats the best defense in modern college football history, and comes back and returns and is still, you know, the highest graded quarterback of the bunch here. Obviously has a little bit of a down year considered, but, like, Trevor Lawrence, it was better than Trevor Lawrence's final year at Clemson, and better than, like, even his sophomore year at Clemson. Like, this guy was, from a performance aspect, in a realm that, like, few have touched, truthfully, over the course of their high school and collegiate careers.
Yeah, I mean, that So the bringing up the Georgia thing is really interesting because that's like the game that's being held up as the C.J. Stroud, the thing people use to go to bat for C.J. Stroud. Look what he did against Georgia. Incredible, amazing performance, answered all his questions. Well, the year before, Bryce Young played Georgia twice, right? The best defense that we've ever seen. And okay, the second one wasn't the best game in the world, but he put up like almost 800 yards, four touchdowns in two games against what is effectively the greatest defense that college football has ever seen, stacked full of NFL first-round defensive linemen or defensive players, and looked good doing it.
Yeah, and honestly, they probably win that natty if Jameson Williams and John Metchie don't go down with ACLs in both those games.
Right.
You know, they just had no one by the end of that. And I think there was like a throw he made at the end of that game that got dropped or was like a contested throw that could have been caught that got dropped because like he was thrown to nobodies by the end of that game. So yeah, Bryce Young, it's just difficult to use that size too much against him with how different his on-field performance has been from everyone else in this draft class. And to compare the Stroud game, Georgia had five more first rounders on the defense the year before, right? They lost five first rounders and one of them wasn't even N'Kobe Dean.
Yes.
Right, N'Kobe Dean was on that team,
right,
and ended up being a third rounder. They lost an insane amount of talent from last year to this year. Still great defense this year. Still obviously great performance from Stroud, but a different animal than what Georgia was doing in 2021 to teams.
Yeah, it is crazy. All right, let's move to a different player. We've talked about the Bryce Young thing a lot already. Talk to me about Tank Dell, because I love Tank Dell as a player, but 5'8", 165 pounds, there's no getting away from that. I mean, that's insane. That's the same weight as Devontae Smith, but 5'8 instead of 6 foot.
Yes. I mean, so it's not completely unprecedented size in terms of guys to make the NFL. Like Tutu Atwell was a little smaller. DeSean Jackson was in that realm coming out. He was 5'9, 169. Hollywood Brown came out in the 160s, but he was like 5'10, 5'11 range. So it happens, right? We've seen guys around this realm, but not quite that small and not quite like as productive as he was. He led college football in yards this past year and led college football in touchdowns. And that was in an offense where obviously like people knew it's going to Tank Dell.
Right.
And you would think, you know, if 165 pounder, if you know that he's getting the ball a lot, you're going to go try to beat him up a little bit, right? You're going to try to get hands on this guy, knowing that's like his kryptonite, and guys just couldn't. And so I think that's the big thing in the NFL today, that like size matters when you're touched, but if you can't get touched, it doesn't really matter. And size doesn't matter anymore in terms of like going over the middle of the field like it once did, because you just can't crown those dudes. You really can't lay shots on them the way you once could. So, you know, a smaller slot receiver like that probably didn't exist 25 years ago in the NFL, but now it's really just that you almost want, I don't want to say you want skinnier guys, but you trade off dynamism for size every day of the week in the NFL nowadays.
It's such an important point that a lot of the reason that you didn't have these really small receivers back in the day, or that they didn't last very long, just doesn't exist anymore. You cannot hit these guys the way you did. I retweeted a video that somebody posted last night, one of those sort of vintage football accounts, of Brett Favre seemingly trying to kill Don Beebe over the course of a game against Detroit, like led him into multiple hospital appointments. Somehow Beebe gets up, they give him the smelling salts and he plays on each time. But like the first throw on this reel was Favre like leading him into a death shot from the backside safety. There was one later on where Favre like bounces around, buys some time in the pocket, throws an absolute YOLO ball down the field. Again, like death shot into the free safety coming over. You can't do that anymore. Like that, you literally can't make those hits in today's NFL. So those are like two shots that a guy like Beebe takes in that game that Tank Dell's just not exposed to anymore. Like, it's not a
risk. It really is striking. And I obviously was like kind of right on the precipice age-wise to like get a taste of that era, but not remember it super duper well. Obviously, right. I was like, you know, 8, 9, 10. Going back and watching just the vast difference of what it looked like back then in terms of the legality, where it was just like a quarterback gets the ball off. If you had beaten your offensive lineman, you were getting a shot in the quarterback. You know, like it didn't matter. You got that shot over the middle of the field. It didn't matter if that ball was coming high. The safety was coming high too, right into your helmet. And it, no flags thrown. That was just the game back then. So obviously I think the advancements are make it more enjoyable in terms of points being scored, in terms of passing proliferating around the NFL. But that physicality was a different animal back then. It was just a vastly, vastly different game.
And I think that is relevant for a lot of these guys. I mean, Tank Dell is the one we've highlighted, but you can also pull up, you know, Josh Downs, Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers, like all, there's a lot of these guys towards the top end of this draft who are a lot more lightweight than is sort of prototypical size-wise, but you can survive and thrive both at the college and the NFL level because of these rule changes and the fact that they're not going to be led into hell by the quarterback.
Yeah, and it's like that's what you want. That's what Miami is right now.
Well, it actually, yeah, for a wide receiver in particular, there's a way where those guys are now super valuable because, you know, you couldn't have a guy, you go back to that Brett Favre era or before, if you had a guy that was 5'9", 165 pounds, but like lightning quick and, you know, able to make crazy plays with the ball in his hands, well, okay, fine, but you couldn't really get the ball in his hands without risking getting him killed. So the level of impact that guy could make was minimal, right? Like, do you really want to carry a roster spot for a guy that you can only get the ball in his hands a couple of times in a sort of safe manner? Everything else is risking having him broken for the year and he's probably done. Or do you just go, no, we need a bigger guy that can take these hits and maybe we lose a little bit on the dynamism range, but like that's the better play here. Now you can actually take advantage of those guys because you're not exposing them to the kind of shots that they used to be exposed to. And all of a sudden there is a world where these tiny guys, you know, Deonte Hardy or whatever in the NFL, these really small receivers can make plays without the risk of being destroyed every single game.
And it's fun. It's fun to watch.
What about the cornerback position? Because we've got a guy, Emmanuel Forbes, who is pushing that world as well. 6 feet, but again, in that 166, 165-pound range, which, you know, the last corner, I guess, that was in that world was also Mississippi State. It was Cameron Dantzler.
Yeah, but even Dantzler, so Dantzler had a good amount of weight even on him. I think it was 175 coming out.
But that
you have so Emmanuel Forbes.
Dantzler had a really weird pre-draft process, though, right? Yeah. Like he's probably a 160 something pound guy who added muscle and then ran like a hippo in like his pre-draft workout. And then now you're like, well, okay, is he slow or is he fast but like really thin? Which is it?
He was slow. was the ultimate and got cooked a little too much on an NFL field. But I will say this, Forbes, I think, can get around it because he's not slow. You know, he ran a 4.35, but he will be the lightest corner drafted since 2000 by 5 pounds. I think Rashard Robinson was the next closest at 171. And even he was like not great in the NFL, obviously. And then he'll be the lightest day one or day two corner because I fully expect him to go in that range.
Right.
Could even sneak into, again, the first round by 10 pounds. By 10 pounds. That's like one of the bigger outliers truly in this draft class. And for the same reasons we're talking about size not mattering as much for wide receivers, just the ability to stick with the guys, I think that's like a similar case to be made for corners trending smaller too. Like your physicality doesn't really matter when you're matched up with a Jalen Waddle or a Tank Dell if you can't touch them. Forbes has kind of the dynamism or the explosiveness and like the athletic traits to match a guy like that then. So I do think he will get bodied around a little bit by more physical wide receivers,
yeah.
But he's so long and so athletic that I'm not too worried. I don't think he goes the full Cam Dantzler route and just can't play at the NFL level. I think it matters in some ways, but I think he also is enough of a playmaker to get by.
And he fights as well. Like you can see it on his tape, but he battles through the size deficiency sometime. But for him, you're basically talking about a cornerback version of Devontae Smith. I mean, 6 foot, 166 pounds,
yeah.
Almost identical breakdown. And when Devontae Smith was coming out, like we were talking about how unprecedented that was. And this is at a position where it's more unprecedented. Like wide receiver is trending smaller than corner generally. So it's even more of an outlier for Forbes at corner. You can definitely see some plays on his tape where, like, he has to put a lot into staying as physical as he is, you know, when he's sort of running and just get trying to maintain contact on a bigger wide receiver. He has to put a lot of effort into that contact, because otherwise he's just going to bounce off a dude that outweighs him by 40 pounds.
Yeah, I am. He is going to be, I think, a really good sort of case study in that if he succeeds the NFL level, maybe you start seeing a lot more guys at the cornerback position start to get trimmed down a little bit, just because of, you know, again, what we're talking about, the whole theme here, where the game's going.
So he's interesting because, you know, he's rail thin, cornerback version of Devontae Smith. But you've got a couple of really sort of short, small corners as well in Trey Tomlinson. We've made that change officially, TCU cornerback. And Clark Phillips, these two sort of much smaller, lightweight corners as well that are presumably going to kick inside to the slot at the next level.
Yeah, Phillips is, to me, kind of like he's within the realm of most slot corner. There, he's 5'9", 184, short arms, 29 1/8 inch. That's like the profile over the past decade or so of guys that you're saying, okay, that's a slot. Whereas Travis Hodge Tomlinson, like he takes that to another degree in that he's under 5'8", under 180 pounds. Like, he is tiny. But the difference being, Phillips was kind of a meh athlete at the combine's pro day, 4'5", 140, 33-inch vertical, 4.21 shuttle's a solid time, but like that's not making me encouraged about him staying on the outside. Whereas Hodge Tomlinson, certain schemes, I mean, he had 11-foot broad jump, he ran 4.41. He looks like, or just at least tests like, a high-end athlete. So I think even though Tomlinson's the smaller one, I think he's the one more adept or has the skill set that could translate better to the outside. Whereas Phillips, I think you're firmly, if you're drafting Clark Phillips, you're either moving him to safety or you're putting him in the slot next season.
Now let's move on to not necessarily a size outlier that one of these guys is, but an arm length outlier as well. So one, I think, on either side of the line of scrimmage, we've got Peter Skoronski, who we've talked about before, 32 1/4 inch arms, or 32 1/2 inch arms, right?
Quarter,
which are basically as small as you're going to find any tackle in the NFL that's had any kind of success. And it's actually well below that 33-inch cutoff that most people would like to see. And then the other side, Kalijah Kansi's talked about as a size outlier for being 6'1", 281 pounds. But honestly, his bigger problem may be the fact that his arms are short. He's got under 31-inch arms, which is absurdly short. And significantly shorter than Aaron Donald, the guy that he's going to get all the comps to because undersized defensive tackle from Pitt. Let's start with Kansi. How much of a problem is it going to be that he has real T-Rex arms?
It is. Yeah, that's the biggest worry. It's not the weight. It is the arm length, because, you know, your run-of-the-mill guard in the NFL is over 32 inches. You're giving up an inch and a half. And now it may not seem like a ton, but that's a lot when you're just talking about touching the guy across from you consistently, which is, you know, football, which is trench play. It is a lot of hand interactions, hand-to-hand combat. And when you are always behind the eight ball in terms of your arm length, you're just going to get locked up a lot more. It's going to make it difficult to get off blocks. He just has to play a different game. He can't stack shed the way, you know, a Jordan Davis would, or that's obviously a terrible comp, but even like the way Aaron Donald can, right? Donald could still hold a block and then get outside and then shed offensive lineman and get and make a play. Kansi, you do not see that, right? You just don't see him sitting on a guard in the run game and then shedding and making a play. It's like, no, he gets around the guard immediately, or else when he gets on him, he has to do something a little different to get off that block than your run-the-mill defensive tackle would. And that's why you're probably going to see teams afraid, or not afraid, but just like a lot of teams don't want that. They don't want to have to make exceptions for a defensive lineman with their rules of how they play run defense. But with Kansi, you have to with that arm length. It's just not enough for him to be able to play the same stylistically that most defensive tackles would.
It's such a wild profile, because obviously you've got the 40-yard dash in the 99th 100th percentile, the 10-yard split, the 95th percentile. But the thing that you think of as his outlier, his sort of overall size, weight amongst defensive tackles is only the 19th percentile. Like, it's small, but it's not completely unprecedented. Never seen this before. Height, 13th percentile, but the arm length is the third percentile. Like, that is basically, this doesn't exist in the NFL. And if you're going to be that guy, you need to have something pretty special you're bringing to the table, which he does. I mean, you know, basically as fast a 40 as you're ever going to see. Incredible get off. I think his tape shows, you know, a lot more sophisticated hand use and ability to shed blocks than some pass rushing defensive tackles. Obviously not Aaron Donald, but there's enough there that you can go to bat for that and say, you know, I'm willing to gamble on this guy, even though he's rocking 30-inch arms.
Yeah, but he will. There has not been a starter in the past decade with that defensive tackle with under 31-inch arms in the NFL. So it's fairly unprecedented. The last guy, I think I went back, the last defensive tackle who was either a day one or day two pick with that short of arms was Chris Zorich in 1992, I want to say, coming out of Notre Dame. So it's been a while. And Zorich was a better college player than he was an NFL player also.
All right, Nolan Smith is the next one, I think, the last one that we want to talk about. 6'2", 238 pounds as an edge rusher. That is insanely lightweight. And because he played on Georgia, it's not like he sort of played, you know, 800 snaps in a season where you get to see a ton of tape of him dominating and overcoming and putting up the kind of production that would make you immediately go, don't care. The entire Georgia defensive line is so deep that they're all working on this crazy rotation where everybody is a kind of bit part player.
Yeah. Can I go back to Skoronski first, just because we kind of glossed over him? I just have a quick little anecdote. Paul Alexander, former Bengals offensive line coach. I was talking to him at the Senior Bowl kind of about arm length. And he said he used to want 35-inch arm tackles when he was starting in the 90s, because back then defensive ends were 280-plus pounds. And every single week you had to run block a 280-plus pounder and then hold up to their bull rushes. And so you had to have arms to get on them before they got on you. And he said by the end of his career, it was like probably like the, you know, early part of the 2010s when the Bengals were kind of like one of the better teams, he dropped that down to 34 inches. And he says now it doesn't matter. It's just, can you move at arm length for offensive tackle, and his opinion about what he's looking for. It's just, can you move? Because everyone found out that, hey, you know, these 35-inch, 330-pound tackles are great in a phone booth, but all of a sudden you get them out in space trying to block Von Miller, trying to block Khalil Mack, and it's lights out. So the position itself has changed to having to match those kind of guys, those kind of athletes off the edge. And it's just, how do you use your hands? Much more so than how long they are, because of just the power aspect has kind of gone by the wayside for a lot of teams about what they want in edge defense. So that's why I think Peter Skoronski, still a great tackle. Flip side of things, Nolan Smith, 239 pounds. He will join Hassan Reddick as the only sub-240-pound defensive lineman in the past 20 years. And even the Cardinals tried to move Reddick as an off-ball linebacker. Right. So I think technically Smith may be the only one, even though Reddick obviously turned out to be better on the edge. But 239 pounds, I really don't care. With his testing profile, I mean, he could put on 10 pounds of pure fat, right, and still be a 4.4 guy and is still a high 30-inch vertical guy. So not that that's how you want to play like defensive end, but it's still not a big deal to me. He's just like shredded, this dude. He just has very low body fat and is tapped out in that regard. So I'm not worried, for the other reason being he was the highest graded run defender in college football over the past two seasons on the edge. The highest graded. He's 239 pounds and the highest graded edge defender against the run. That just speaks to how he plays the game, right? I think he's going to go a lot higher than maybe people think, because he's a guy who in interviews, you sit down with him, talk to him at all. He is passionate about the game. He's going to be the best football player he can be. And that's something that coaches are easily going to buy into at the next level.
I think for him as well, like obviously the weight is the concern. It's like under 240 pounds on the edge. That's not ideal. But the fact that he's 6'2" is, that's better than if he was like 6'4", 6'5", and lightweight. Like those are the guys that I have a real worry about.
Yes.
The guys that are long and thin and don't have any kind of bulk behind them, they have a really crappy track record recently. Being a relative...
The Leonard Floyds.
Yeah, the Leonard Floyds, or, you know, Arden Key.
Kiki Mingo.
Arden Key has turned into a pretty good pass rusher, but it's only because he's bulked up over the last, like, several years. He sort of washed out. Who's the Shaquille Calhoun, the Michigan State.
Shalique Calhoun. Parkevious Mingo, they were all kind of long lean.
Whereas being like relatively compact at sort of 240-ish pounds, I think is probably an advantage rather than the long, thin guy. So it's really just a case of can you deal with how lightweight he is? And again, if you're going to be like that, you need to have the special offset, and he does. He's got insane burst, get off, vertical explosion, like all those numbers are 90 plus percentile. Like that's what you need to offset that.
Yeah. And I've not seen, and this is kind of something that's obviously more important nowadays, I've not seen a better run defender playing option runs. I mean, he is disciplined, and obviously his speed to get to the sideline, he's as good as gets against us. Like that's a value add in today's NFL. You know, if you're in a division, you can be in a division like the NFC East, where you have multiple quarterbacks, and maybe even Sam Howell is going to get utilized in the run game too, that are off used in the run game. That if you can shut down, if you have a guy that can chase down Jalen Hurts, a guy that can chase down Daniel Jones, a guy that can chase down Sam Howell in space, like that just allows you so much more flexibility in how you can play the run.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Okay, so when I was doing my mock draft on Monday, I reached this point in the first round where I'm like, I don't like any pick from here on in. Like, I there's nobody I want to pick. I think there's like 20 players maybe that you want in the first round. And after that, you're like, you got to pick somebody, right? You would ideally in a dream world, you'd love to trade down, but that requires somebody wanting to trade up, and they have the same problem. So I sort of found myself looking at a bunch of these teams towards the bottom of the first round, the teams that are involved in this arms race right now to become Super Bowl contenders. The Chiefs are already obviously there. The Bengals trying to get over the hump. The Bills trying to get over the hump. All these teams that are trying to knock off Kansas City. And you're like, they are prime spots to me to trade down if they could. But if they can't, look to trade up into that teens range and sort of target a guy that's just not going to last until their pick, but they have the roster where they can go aggressive and start attacking these positions. So the trade I ended up making was Kansas City jumping up to 23, I think, to grab Darnell Wright and play right tackle. But it occurred to me that there's this world now where I think a lot of these teams at the end of the first round could actually be quite aggressive and proactive and potentially trade up. So I was curious on your take for players that would be targets for that, like players that teams would be looking to trade up to get in the first round, which is usually like taboo. That's not what you do. You don't trade up in the first round for a non-quarterback.
Yeah, so I think there's two realms or two different aspects of this. One is I think the scarce positions are ones that you'll see teams trade up for. And it's just like they're going to trade up for the last one in the group. And so I think offensive tackle, it would very much surprise me if someone doesn't move up for one of these offensive tackles, because you have Skoronski, you got Paris Johnson, Broderick Jones, Darnell Wright, and then that might be it in terms of tackles people feel good about in the first round. I like Anton Harrison too in the first round range. Maybe not everyone does, but you could see a team towards the back end of the first round, maybe say the Bengals, and they really want an offensive tackle. They really need that. You know, you really, Darnell Wright's like on the board at 20, and you think maybe one of the teams there is going to pick him if he falls a little bit more. I could see very well one of those teams, the back end, Buffalo, Cincinnati, moving up for one of the tackles, maybe the last tackle that's on the board. That's one guy. I think then the other flip side of that, the other, you know, people that you trade up for are unique skill sets, right? Guys with who maybe can't replicate what they bring to the table in this class that other guys can't. And so that to me is someone like a Jaxon Smith-Njigba at wide receiver. He is like a ready-made NFL slot receiver that tomorrow will make an impact for your roster, right? There's not a lot of day one starters, high-end starters in this draft class of receiver. He's one. And so that to me could force someone's hand to move up for. And I feel similarly about Dalton Kincaid. Day one, ooh, impact, tight end, receiver. You want that in your offense? Good luck finding it anywhere else in this draft. After that, I could also see someone moving up for one of the defensive tackles like Kalijah Kansi, where if you want juice at the three tech position, and now Tommy Adebare is in this class too, Northwestern DT has it as well, but like not the way Kansi does on a football field. Not, he doesn't play the same way that Kansi does. So that's just another skill set that's unique enough that you just won't find second, third, fourth round if you don't get it in the first.
The other thing I think that prompts those trades sometimes is once a guy starts to slide, like the unexpected slide that you're not necessarily anticipating, a team all of a sudden goes, oh, wow, we didn't expect to be in the range of even this being a possibility. So I kind of wonder, you know, Jalen Carter being an obvious potential slide candidate given his offseason so far, but like the closer we get to the draft, the more you're hearing Will Anderson might not be the best edge rusher on boards. I don't think, like, I think it's crazy, but
that one, the whole, oh my gosh, I know he's a friend of the program, but the Chris Sims having him fifth almost gave me an aneurysm.
Yeah, we've already ripped his edge rusher rankings yesterday. Chris Sims is being particularly Chris Sims this offseason with his rankings. That's out there. I will say, though, so I went there looking yesterday. I pulled out the top two edge rushers that have been drafted in every draft since 2016, right? Mm-hmm. And just added them to an ultimate filter along with the top three or four guys this year. And obviously, you're obviously folding in all the sort of elite guy prospects like Myles Garrett, Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Chase Young, but you're also bringing in a bunch of guys, Derek Barnett, who were the other ones?
Jalen Phillips, Quiddy Pay.
Yeah, Jalen Phillips, Quiddy Pay, Cleveland Farrell, a bunch of guys like that, the ones that haven't necessarily bombed, but haven't been good NFL players, really. And most of them, like their best season in college, in terms of PFF grade, in terms of pressure rate as well, peaked above where Anderson has ever got to. So Anderson's peaked, you know, high 80s, reasonable pressure rate, or pass rush win weight, actually, I was using. But most of those guys, like Cleveland Farrell, got his best season was a 90. Derek Barnett had two seasons with a 90-plus grade. Quiddy Pay had a couple of really good seasons in there. Like, almost all of them, their best year. Shaq Lawson, I think, was one of those guys as well.
Yeah, probably.
But, like, their best season got better than Will Anderson. Now, I think it's not apples for apples. Like, he had some things working against him that probably artificially depressed his grade a little bit. But I can see a world where you at least back away from the idea that he is a true, you know, blue chip elite edge rushing prospect. Now, where I struggle is how far can you drop that in this draft where the comparisons are Tyree Wilson, Nolan Smith, like, you know.
Yeah, it's like in this draft, and sure, I can see a world where you're maybe a little down on Will Anderson, but the production thing you were just talking about, still better grade than Tyree Wilson, better grade than
Nolan Smith.
Will McDonald. Oh. Saying Will Anderson, Will McDonald, still a better grade than who was the third guy I had above him, Lucas Van Ness. Like, it's in this class, he still is the top graded one as a pass rusher. And he was playing out of a, you know, four tech a lot last year, more than he did at any point in his career. And that's just like objectively not who he is.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. So, like, honestly, you can make the argument that everybody tried to make last year for Trayvon Walker actually applies a little bit to Will Anderson. Like, they did not necessarily throw him in the best position to put up monster numbers and be just a pure edge rushing prospect. And if they did, maybe he's in that category with the Bosas and those other guys.
I was going to say, whereas like the Bosa, like the Ohio State edge guys over the years were put on, you know, one-on-ones, just go attack on the outside. That was, you know, why they look so good, and obviously why they got so good as rushing the passers, because they were basically just rushing the way teams rush in the NFL, knowing that, hey, just like, you got to get to the quarterback. We can't just scheme rush you, you know, like a lot of teams do in college.
It's also hilarious, by the way, just how gaslit everybody got with the Trayvon Walker talk last year. Like, you see this when you draw it up this way and you look at basically the entire careers, like, even these guys that are not good in the NFL had like a 90-plus pass rushing grade season somewhere in college. And then you got Trayvon Walker with his just consistent 65 every year. And it's like, what are we even doing talking about this guy as like the number one pick in the draft? It's madness.
Well, I mean, he is athletically
yes
in a tier that doesn't exist.
Agreed.
And that's what you're buying into. But I do think the most damning thing was, or the worst argument was that it's like, oh, that's Georgia's defense.
Yes.
Did you see Jalen Carter last year? You know, like that was just Georgia's defense that they didn't want to rush the passer. It's like, did you see Jalen Carter last year? Did you see who was the edge rusher who sadly was – is not even in the NFL anymore. Never mind. I'm blanking on his name. But like that guy's producing. It was not just the scheme.
Yeah.
Like there were guys in the D-line who were getting after it. It just was kind of, you could just say it. Like Trayvon was behind the learning curve.
That
was fine to say. We don't have to make too many excuses for him.
If you wanted to make the argument that, oh, he's the freakiest athlete we've ever seen, therefore I don't care what his production was, we'll figure it out. That's fine. But the argument that everybody was making of, oh, we like the Georgia defense just isn't, it's forcing him to do something that isn't letting him, you know, succeed at the next level. That was always ridiculous. And you could see that comparing him to players in that defense. You can see it comparing to basically everybody in this list as well. That was kind of crazy. But anyway, my original point with all this is I can kind of see a world where Anderson slips a little bit if there's a couple of teams that dislike that. I could see a world where Devin Witherspoon slips a little bit. You know, I think a lot of people have him as cornerback number one, but the teams that covet other people at cornerback number one, so Gonzalez in particular, like the things that would make you worry about Witherspoon on his tape, independent of the 1 year thing, would be like, is he that great an athlete? Like, can he really hang at this level against legit NFL people? And if you're in that questioning world, you're not going to have him in the top 10. You might have him sliding into the middle of the first round somewhere.
Yeah, I do, though, think the Lions trading Jeffrey Okuda away was a little bit of a signal in my eyes that they might be going cornerback at number six.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, obviously, you never say, you never pigeonhole yourself this early on, you know, because if, like, Bryce Young falls to you, you're probably going to draft Bryce Young.
Sure.
But I do think they made that trade knowing that they have corners they like in this draft. And Witherspoon, if you just watch his tape, watch what the Lions do, there's just the fit makes too much sense. So I'd be surprised. Like, I'd put the odds pretty heavily on him being pick six right now if the board plays out chalky to start.
One more name to throw at you. What if teams traded up for Bijan Robinson?
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
because here's the thing, right? There are a lot of people talking about, does he go number 8 to Atlanta? Does he go number 10 to Philadelphia? If he doesn't go there, you have this. And then the teams that make a lot of sense are the ones towards the back end of the first round. Dallas, Cincinnati, a ton of teams in the late 20s. But that kind of middle world of the teens doesn't make a lot of sense for him to go to a lot of those spots necessarily. And yet those teams that we talked about, the aggressive teams wanting to go over the top, could they tempt themselves into, this is the best player in the draft, and he's available at pick number 16.
I just don't see it. I don't think in today's day and age it's going to happen. Now, the Browns, back in 2012, traded up to draft Trent Richardson number 3 overall. So it's not unprecedented that teams will make dumb decisions. But I just, giving up more draft capital for running back in this running back class, I don't see it. I don't see it.
In this economy?
I can't get on board with that.
Yeah. In this economy, just can't happen. All right. So, the last thing. Who is this year's Cole Strange going to be? Let me throw you some names that are all over my timeline right now. Some of them I've actually seen talked about before in mock drafts and stuff, and therefore can't be that crazy. So, for example, there's a bunch of Cedric Tillmans in this list, the wide receiver from Tennessee, the other wide receiver from Tennessee. I could see that happening.
I wouldn't, but I could see it. He ran the same 3-cone. People were shitting on Quentin Johnson's 3-cone. They ran the same 3-cone.
Yeah.
That's worrisome.
In the world of, like, so, okay, what's our scale? Like, absolutely will never happen. Plausible, something in the middle. That's plausible. That I could see that happening in this wide receiver class.
Okay, plausible. Yeah, I'll give it plausible.
I wouldn't do it, but I could see it happening. What else have we got here? We have a bunch of people actually saying Johnny Mingo, the wide receiver from Ole Miss.
Oh, man. I don't see that one. That one I don't see. I could see Tillman. Mingo, no. That one I don't even say. I don't even think plausible.
I love Mingo a lot, and I don't really see that as plausible. I think that would be – you would have to buy into him to an insane degree to get him there.
Yeah.
Julius Brents, the cornerback from Kansas State. That's a pretty popular one.
That one, that one's very plausible. Like that one would not surprise me at all. I know there's a lot of people who are big fans of him. And again, goes back to unique skill set. 6'4" corners.
Yeah,
is a unique skill set. So if that's something you want in your defense, not every class you're going to find someone quite like that. It's a high end athlete with that size. So yeah, Julius Brents. That one could happen. That one very well could happen.
So both me and Steve have been pushing the idea of John Michael Schmitz going in the first round. But actually, a lot of the replies have been talking about the other two centers in the draft, either Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin or Luke Whipler from Ohio State.
Tippmann, I could very well see. It would not surprise me whatsoever if someone back end around one, like even like the Giants, pulled the trigger on a center like that. So, yeah. Tippmann's probably the most plausible one yet, I'll say.
All right. Staying on the interior, there's a couple of guys mentioned. The guy that you brought up the last show, I think, Chandler Zavala, the interior offensive lineman. Has he got a shot, or is this just, you're in the next band?
That one I could see. He's a heck of an athlete. Now, he had the best pro day of any of the interior line class, in my opinion. Obviously had really good tape this past fall. I think if he played more than one season, you could see that. But I just think NFL likes guys who have played a lot of football. And obviously played D2 football, but who have played a lot against top competition, hasn't had that. So I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. We had quite a lot of replies playing playing the game, I think, because Byron Young was a reply a lot. But nobody specified which Byron Young. So you get
it has to be the Tennessee one.
You get to give a shot of either one.
And he's 25. So I'm going to go with no on that one. But a heck of an athlete. He goes day two somewhere. The Tennessee one.
Okay. DJ Turner.
DJ Turner is probably one of the more probable ones here. Just because 4.26.
That's Steve's guy.
Steve loves him.
Michigan corner.
I worry about his size. I mean, he is under 180 pounds. And legitimately had issues with it on tape already in terms of being pushed around a little too much. So that's my worry with him, but the athlete's insane. He'll go, if not first round, he'll go second round.
Tucker Kraft, South Dakota State tight end.
That one would very much surprise me just because it's hard to see him going over the logjam that is tight ends ahead of him, in my opinion. Like I think pretty much everyone has Dalton Kincaid, Michael Mayer, and Sam Laporta ahead of him. We're going to see four tight ends go in the first round? I don't think so. I could see Sam Laporta come off the board in the first round, but Kraft running the way he did, a full tenth of a second slower than Laporta, I don't think it's going to happen.
We had our bets show yesterday, and there were a lot of kind of spicy takes about how many tight ends were going to go in the first round, particularly comparing it to like wide receivers. You know, there was that report, I forget who it came from, that basically, there's one receiver that everybody loves, right? Jackson Smith and Jigba, and everybody else is a second-round grade. So if the NFL really is that sour on this wide receiver group in the same year where this is like an all-time tight end class, maybe we do see a bunch of tight ends end up being pushed into that first round. Antonio Maffey, the guard from UCLA.
Oh, no. That one's not happening. He can't move, sadly. He doesn't have the lateral agility of a first round guard. I bet he goes day three, truthfully.
Oof, that's not ideal. We've got running backs that aren't Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan.
Low. I mean, A-Chain would be the only one that I would even come to mind as a possibility, just because, hey, you want the fastest running back in the NFL. That's A-Chain's got elite speed. So, and that's, that gets overdrafted. What's one trait that gets overdrafted consistently the most? Speed. Right. So I think he goes highly, but first round, I don't quite see. I can see him going to like Dolphins in the middle of the second, though.
We got to have UCLA fans in the replies because the other UCLA guard was mentioned as well.
John Gaines? No, right. It ain't happening.
Matthew Bergeron, the tackle from Syracuse.
Yeah, he's a wild card in that I see him as like a day two tackle, but there's only like two guys I even like as day two tackles. So, you're going to overdraft them then. It's the fact of life. When there's not too many, there's not a deep class, you got to get it while you can. So if we do see a run, we see everyone, all the four I mentioned earlier, Anton Harrison as well. Wouldn't surprise me if Cincinnati's still like, we still need one. We're still going to draft one. Or the Bills are like, we still need one. And then Matthew Bergeron might be next up.
Jatavius Martin, the other corner from Illinois.
Ooh. I just don't see it. One, because safety is not that valuable. Like, safety doesn't go in the first round to begin with. But I love his tape. Heck of an athlete. And probably, like, firmly middle of day two guy at this point.
That's probably it from the list. Anyway, so who's this year's Cole Strange? Who's the complete random that somebody is going to pick in the first round?
All right, there's three guys that I kind of highlighted as intriguing in that mold. One's Derek Hall, the Auburn edge rusher. I've not seen a lot of him to the first round, but just because he's such a high-end athlete at such a premium position. Him, I could see Cody Mock, the North Dakota State offensive lineman, go in the first round, just because, again, you have the best athlete in the interior line class. That was kind of like Cole Strange last year. They just went ahead and drafted him. They're like, let's do it. And then the last one that I could see sneaking into the first, where was it on my list here? Who was it? I've lost it. Oh, Darnell Washington, the Georgia tight end. Mm. I think he's gotten mocked there a good amount, though, but I could see him. Because, again, unique skill set, unique size. I don't know if he lasts too long because of that.
Yeah, Brents, I think, is a good one. That, I think, is a good shout for a guy that just has freaky, ability that could get taken that high. I'm trying to think of a guy that would be completely insane but still vaguely plausible. I think I kind of come back to the wide receivers in this class because it's such a chaotic group where we're low on like surefire things outside of Jackson Smith and Jigba. The next group, a lot of people are down on. The next group, a lot of people have in all kinds of different orders. Like, I could see one of those sort of guys that are clear day two or three guys somehow getting drafted in the first round. Like, what if the league loves Marvin Mims? Something like that.
That'd be wild.
Yeah. It would. I mean, it's crazy. Like, I shouldn't be any chance of that happening. But, like, I can definitely picture a war room somewhere that is arguing Marvin Mims is better than Jordan Addison, and he should be a first-round guy.
I mean, he tested better than all the other guys in this class. So, we'll see. I would say it, though.
Well, we got a couple of weeks until we find out who is this year's Cole Strange. Anyway, Mike, that's going to do it for today's show. Me and Steve will be back tomorrow talking to Dane Brugler and the giant treasure trove of information that man has. We'll also be talking to, I don't think you know this, actually, the founder of the S2 test, the cognitive test that that everybody's talking about right now. We're going to be talking to him later today, and that will be Friday's show, I think. So we're going to find out exactly what they're measuring there, why it's better than the Wonderlic, why it's able to predict Brock Purdy, and who this year's Brock Purdy is going to be. So that'll be useful for NFL teams before they head to the draft, I think.
Yeah, tell him to give us a full list of all the numbers. I need to see these.
Unfortunately, he already prefaced this by saying he was unable to confirm exact numbers, but can talk generally
about
guys.
Piece of shit. Get him off the show.
Guys that did good or bad.
His invite's revoked.
We'll see what we can tease out of him in terms of actual information. But that'll be Friday.
Just do the thing where you're like, if Bryce Young scored higher than 85,
scratch your eyebrow,
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Right.
Really just put him in a blender there.
All right, so that'll be Friday's show. Mike, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for showing up. Take it easy.
You as well, Sam.
We'll talk to you all tomorrow.